Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hello, and thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Adrian Kaler. Adrian is a leadership engagement expert, podcast host, and founder of global executive coaching and training firm, Take New Ground. Thank you for joining us today, Adrian.
Yeah, man. So good to be here. Good to be with you, brother.
Yeah. So what does success mean to you?
Yeah, great question. And I appreciate that homework. I mean, I think for me, success, let me get weird for a second and let me warn all the listeners for a second. I'll get weird. So success isn't a thing. Success isn't a goal line. Success isn't an arrival point. Success is a way of being, I would say, in my kind of nerdy language. So if I'm successful, I'm actually ready. I'm ready to take on whatever life's giving me, and I'm going to engage it in such a way that I can produce something positive, something proactive, something impactful, no matter what is coming my way. That's being successful. So I am actually operating in the world in a very generative way, I would say.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting viewpoint, because engaging in life isn't just about the good stuff that happens to
no.
you, right?
No.
It's equally the times where things don't work out, or the times where there's...
Yeah, I had a mentor 10 years ago. 15 years ago, I remember him saying this one thing, and I thought it was so profound and so true. He said, most of life is on the ascend or the descend. You know, it's not like at the bottom in the worst case scenario that obviously happens at times, or it's not like in these peak experiences and when we win the Super Bowl or get the massive client or whatever. Life happens on the way up and on the way down. And, you know, how do I handle myself? How do I carry myself when life isn't what I want it to be right now? Or when life, you know, in something, I'm pursuing something great and it's not quite working out like I want it to be, how do I carry myself? And how am I with myself? And how am I with other people? Or when I've already hit it. I mean, so many clients I work with, they're very successful and they've had a successful exit. They're building a massive, and then they're prone to just playing not to lose, because they've got it and they've arrived, quote unquote, and blah, blah, blah. And then they go to just kind of protecting their kingdom, instead of realizing life happens in these cycles. So who we are in the midst of transition really, and I guess it generates the meaning and the purpose in life, I would say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think in those moments, I'm kind of sick. I really enjoy those transitional moments. And
yes,
there's a lot of people who shy away from them, but those are the moments of growth, right?
Like, oh man.
You think about like a skydiver and they're about to jump out the plane when they're looking over that edge right before that happens.
Yes.
How alive do they feel in that moment?
Oh man. Oh man. I was just journaling today, and journaling is a pattern of mine, early morning journaling. And if I were to grab it from the kitchen table right now and read you a part of it, I am in many areas of my life right now, feel like I'm swimming against stream, swimming upstream. And I wrote all that down just because that's what's happening. And then my next line was, thank God I'm me.
That's
because
awesome.
I say, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, it's a challenge. I mean, we use this leadership assessment tool. I've been trained in dozens of them. There's only one that I use. It's called the Harrison assessment. There's only 150 consultants in the US that have access to it. And, I won't nerd out with you for a second about it, but the purpose of why we use it is it gauges the only thing that's tied to performance scientifically. And that's actually people's preferences. It's not personality. Personality tests are fun and, you know, entertaining for sure. And human beings can't stop being fascinated by themselves and blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't matter when it comes to results on the ground. People will always follow their interests and they'll always pursue their preferences, always. Even in really passive aggressive, even toxic ways, people will always go after what they want. So there's huge amounts of data that comes through this report, and it's, you know, it's brilliant. There's one number that I'm consistently fascinated by is this they're gauging of this thing called once a challenge. And anybody I work with has a high once a challenge score, as do I. So it's just kind of this air of like, bring it on. Oh, this is tough. fuck yeah, I'm in.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So, and that's interesting. So I guess that perspective, because the tests that I've seen, they're kind of like personality based tests,
right.
Say,
right.
You fit in this bucket. So this is how right. You manage, this is how you look after things. And this is more along the lines of like, this is your preferences. So what should you spend your time on those things and avoid things that aren't, or what's the purpose of that assessment?
Well, what they found is there's two main theories in the assessment. The first one is called the enjoyment performance theory. And the punchline of that theory is that if someone spends 70% of their time doing what they prefer doing, they have an increased chance of success of 300 to 400%. So pretty significant is if I spend 70% of my time doing what I prefer doing, I have an increased success rate of 300 to 400%. The challenge for us is that we don't have language for our preferences. We know what they are. Like, we know what it feels like when I'm on, right? Or I'm in flow, or, you know, I'm like, you know, I sit down at my desk and it's 4 hours later and I haven't gotten up and gone to the bathroom. I haven't eaten and I'm great and I'm invigorated. I'm alive, right? We know the experience. We just don't have language for it. And if we don't have language for it, we can't engineer it. So part of it is to get clear around, you know, language for what I prefer, and therefore the flip side too, what's happening that I don't prefer. And also give yourselves permission. Everybody I work with, and I'm sure like you as well, high ambition, really hard driver, and are just going to say yes to it all, right? It's just like, I'll take it on, I'll figure it out, right? Entrepreneurs, I almost always only work with entrepreneurs for that reason, because they're, you know, gutsy and they want the ball in the fourth quarter. With seconds left, it's like, give me the ball, coach. That type of mentality, that they call that authoritative in the assessment, and I call it want the ball. Point being that's the first thing. Second theory in the assessment is this paradoxical leadership theory, which I think is really, I know it's very helpful. I think probably the most impactful, because it shows our internal life as leaders and also our cultural life as team leaders. In these paradoxes, these 12 paradoxes, it shows, and I believe these are unavoidable. These are gravity for us, because life happens like paradoxes. Like, for example, some simple ones to understand, the communication paradox. What's my preference for being frank? And what's my preference for being diplomatic, right? So being straightforward, forthright, and to the point. And what's my preference for saying things in a tactful manner that works for the people? And if I'm high on both of those, I've got versatility, right? I can be frank when I need to and straight up and to the point. I can also package things more kindly and sneak into the conversation in a way. And I've got flexibility. If I only have preference for frank and not diplomacy, I'm blunt, right? If I've got preference for diplomacy and no frankness, I'm evasive. And if you're too out of balance under stress, this is what's cool. And I'll show this to you. I'll send you an assessment. We can walk through it. If I'm people that are really evasive, this happens a lot, really highly diplomatic, low on frankness, they're evasive, right? They don't say at all. That's there for them. And then under stress, though, they'll flip into blunt. Same thing if someone's really blunt, under stress, they might flip into evasive. So under like when the limbic system gets involved and we're, you know, and there's, I don't know anybody today that's not under a lot of stress, we're unpredictable even to ourselves or to other people. So it gives great language for the tensions we all walk in. And there's like 11 other paradoxes, but it's really helpful, especially when you are engineering team culture, because everybody will take this assessment and I'll debrief everybody on. And then we get in a room for a couple of days and talk about the future. We talk about current reality first, which is where things are and how people show up and what's natural for them. And what's dysfunctional or whatever, what's not helpful, what's not resourceful. And it's usually people are laughing because it's exactly on. Like, it's crazy how the thing reads your mail. And then you can see how people compensate for each other, where people go under stress and how to really then support each other. The challenge with most of these assessments is because it's so, to your point, very labely, right? It's like, oh, Phil's this. And anytime we get labels, the human brain's going to do what the human brain will do, which is look out for number one. And try to survive, look good, feel good, be right, be in control. These are the survival needs. So usually assessments are actually used as weapons. So therefore, most assessments and most people, most cultures aren't there to work through the difficulties to get to a great result. We're there to be right and be justified and cover our own ass and politic and all that kind of stuff that can happen in team life. So if you don't, if you're not really rigorous on the purpose of it and don't hold people accountable to how they handle the information, it can be really dangerous. So this is the only one I use because it really is, there's no sinners and saints in this assessment. It's not even, and if I've got a low score on something, it's not like an indictment. It's actually, this is just a low preference for me. I can do what I don't prefer. And there's ways in which I can engineer my life to do that. That takes some more discipline, obviously. It takes a lot more intentionality. Or I can, you know, strategically delegate. And like, there's things that I don't like doing. I can do it. It just takes me 10 times longer than it takes my assistant to do. She ought to do all that. You know, I ought to do what only I can do, or really what gives me life. Cause I'm, you know, I need to own all the asset that I am in my business when I'm full go. And she ought to own all the asset that she is in her business. And where there are ways that we can share responsibilities in a very open-handed, on the table type conversation, not, hey, I'm so sorry, I'm asking you to do this. No, no, no. This is what you do really well. Rock and roll, get this done. 2 hours, let me know how it goes. And there's more freedom and less guilt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, the way I think of it is more of strength-based assets versus...
Right on.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on. This is the same science behind the StrengthsFinder. If you're pulling it from the StrengthsFinder, StrengthsFinder just gives you top five, and I used to teach it. I used taught StrengthsFinder for 10 years. It's just anemic when it comes to application compared to the Harrison assessment.
Yeah, and strength-based in general, I know there's obviously the probably patented term for that, but strength-based in general, I think, is putting somebody in a position to be successful. And
right on.
Had employees where they were not a good fit in the role they were in for whatever reason, and putting them in a position where they excel in is incredibly important, and they thrived in that. And then there's even been times where my company wasn't a good fit for them. And they left and moved on and came back later on and said, that was a great move for me. Thank you.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think that's incredibly important.
Anytime there's a breakdown, like where somebody's not completing on what they've promised, like a job description is a set of promises. It ought to be. Most job descriptions aren't. They're like descriptions of what are they? They're like descriptions of best case scenarios. Usually they're not handled like a set of promises, which they ought to be. But anytime there's a breakdown, like somebody doesn't keep their promise, we say, a broken commitment is a cry for help. So if I've got a person that's not completing on what they said they would complete on, and I could either go hold them accountable, which doesn't work and isn't your job to hold anybody accountable. In a great culture, people hold themselves accountable in public, right? It's like it's the team is a space to give an account that's different than somebody else pseudo being responsible for holding me accountable. Like that's a big red flag. Anytime I hear somebody say it, it's so in the zeitgeist. People just say it and don't even think about what they mean. But if someone doesn't keep their word and doesn't complete on their word, it's a cry for help. That's the way I see it. So I can come at it from empathy saying, hey, Tom, you said you'd get this done by noon today. And it's late. What's going on? Are you okay? First off, are you okay? And then you listen, because if I have a Tom on my team, he's going to be committed to keeping his word. And so if he doesn't keep his word, something must be going on. Something he's either not talking about or just needs to talk about. And so we'll get right into that conversation. So we get past symptoms and get really to causal issues.
So a lot of that is just in general, being a counselor and listening.
Right on.
Is that something that you excel at, having those conversations? Because you talked about how you find comfort in difficult conversations. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that one of your strengths on the assessment, or?
That strength would show up in a number of ways on the assessment. I'm really frank and really diplomatic. That'd be one. I'm really opinions paradox is certainty in your own opinion and open to others, like open and reflective. I'm well balanced in that. I'm both optimistic and I analyze pitfalls. I'm really well balanced in that. That's another one of the strategic acumen, they call it. So if you're optimistic, I'm off the charts optimistic, and I'm really up for examining trouble now, that especially, and then predicting trouble that might happen in the future. Yeah. So if I see any kind of symptoms of somebody starting to break their word in a small way, I do have poise. That's another paradox where it's like somebody's committed to self-improvement and they're committed to stress management. If you are not very committed to stress management, and you're really stressed out, then you're really, you know, anxiously, you know, stressed achievement instead of poised achievement. So if I see a small indication that something's off, I'll check in with people and pretty quickly, really open-handed, and just follow a hunch. You know, I'm really intuitive as well. And I both trust, but I always test my intuition. Meaning, I don't know if it's true, but I'll bring it up and say, seem off. Are you okay? And yeah, I'm okay. Well, hold on. Here's a few things I'm seeing. What's going on? Okay with that tension. Yeah.
Have you ever had to change the environment or the situation for how to get those conversations out of somebody?
What do you mean?
So had an individual where in an office one-on-one setting, maybe it doesn't work for them, right? Or maybe you specifically are not the one to have that conversation with somebody for whatever reason. Or I guess if it's your team, then you surround yourself with people that you could have, you know, those type of conversations with. But, you know, for instance, maybe somebody's intimidated in a certain setting with you or something like that.
Yeah.
Have you had those situations where you need to take it outside and in a different environment to pull that information out of them in a better setting?
I would say, I mean, in general, we're pattern machines as humans, right? So, you know, we've got this very unconscious beliefs that are, there's like, what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about like, ruts on the road. You know, like we naturally, our brain is looking to save energy always. It's the number two agenda of the brain is save energy. Number one is to survive. Number two is to save energy so I can survive later. Part of the way of saving energy is to predict the future and to live inside of those predictions, i.e., to your point, if I'm in the office, there's only certain types of conversations I have in the office. So people like to have like polite conversations in the office, which is usually bullshit. Like the way that people justify not being honest is like, I'm being polite. We give ourselves credit, but for our cowardice. So it's at times really helpful to shift the environment because the brain doesn't know what to do, you know, and it kind of opens people up. So to go on a walk with someone's really great. It changes the environment. You guys are literally shoulder to shoulder as you're walking instead of across the table, which feels adversarial, but you're like shoulder to shoulder when you're walking. That can be really helpful. And it's movement generates creativity for our brains naturally, instead of just sitting in one seat. And, you know, certain rooms, certain environments have a predictable culture to them. So, you know, I mean, even my business partner will tell stories about a team he was running where if the team got stuck at all, he'd take them out bowling, but they had to bowl the opposite hand, you know? So I'm right-handed. So it'd be left-handed bowling, which is like I suck at bowling anyway, and don't even really call bowling a sport. Sorry, folks. But if bowling was a sport, then I'd be going left-handed, which is just embarrassing and kind of makes it fun and makes it light. So we could talk about tough things in a light way.
No, that's great. I love the idea of walking in that. I'm somebody who, like right now on Zoom, if I'm on a Zoom meeting, I have no problem getting up behind and walking around while I'm talking.
Right.
There's been times where I'll lay on the floor, you know, I'm trying to process something.
Right. Yeah.
And it's weird to break it up like that, but I think it's important to have those different conversations. You know, I walk through the woods if I'm trying to think of something. If I want to get on and have a conversation with somebody, I need to sometimes put myself in the right, you know, frame of mind before having a conversation with them.
Yeah. Well, I put that all in the category of self-leadership, which is a huge part of my work with folks. You know, people always hire me for results, which is great. And generating results is the non-negotiable of the contract. Like what you want to get done. And then that tracked back into team engagement and how they are as a leader with other people, because leadership is generating results through others, which is a big jump for somebody that's like successful themselves or used to doing it themselves. And now they have to lead other people to generate the results they could do, which is a very big, whole different world, obviously. But then it all comes back to self-leadership or self-mastery, we would call it, which is that like, hold on, who am I committed to being in the conversation? Answer that. What do I then need to do to generate that mood for myself? And if I'm out in the woods or if I'm laying down or if I'm stretching or if I'm walking or whatever, it puts me, or even what do I need to wear? You know, it's like, I remember in college, like finals week, I would dress up. Why would I dress up? Because that's really weird. Because it's freaking game time.
Yep.
This is finals week. This is like Super Bowl. So I need to get my, and me dressing up would get myself in a certain mood. There's a reason why I'm wearing a collared shirt today on with you versus like a t-shirt I'd wear on a Saturday. Like, it gets me in a certain mood. So that's, you know, I'm glad you do that. I'm not surprised, knowing you, that you have that thoughtfulness and want to really engineer your own self and your own thinking so that you can show up in the way that you need to show up, either for the project or the problem that you're facing or the people that you're with.
Well, you know, and that early on in my career, as I'm sure you have, you always just think, hey, I'm just Phil, right? Or I'm just Adrian, like, right. I'm just this guy. But you have to manage how the other person is seeing you.
Yeah.
And an entrepreneur, a business leader, a manager. And there is a tremendous power shift with that. And there's they have a different perception of you. And right. So with me, I'm always trying to be conscious of that. Through body language and how they're reacting, but also the situation I'm in, to make sure that I'm being conscious of that. And early on in my career, I picked that up, and I never really thought of it. But at the time, I was like, oh my God, they see me differently than what I thought. Cause I just thought, hey, I'm just Phil. I'm just the guy that you're going to go out to the bar with, you know, in my 20s. And No, it was a different kind of view from them.
Yeah. I don't think you can manage it. I know what you mean. I don't think you can manage it, but you can be really intentional about crafting it, which might be the same thing. You might mean that when you say that, because I can't, I mean, the meaning in any communication resides in the listener, right? So all I can do is be really intentional on my end about my impact I'm committed to generate with the other person, and then be meticulous about that. In small and big ways. I was just flashing back to a lunch I had with a guy, potential client here in LA. And we got to the restaurant we're going to meet at, and I was there first, and I was deciding, are we going to be inside or outside? Now, I was thinking about that for the purpose of the conversation. How loud will it be outside? How loud would it be inside? What's the right mood I want? And I'm thinking through that because I care about the outcome. And so I can't manage someone's experience, but I can throw myself at generating it.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And then if I'm paying attention, I can watch and see if they're engaged or not. I can watch and see if I'm connecting or not. I can inquire into it if I don't think I am. And anytime somebody's that intentional, it's not off-putting. It's just weird. Most people just kind of coast through life and don't live with that level of intentionality or what might be seen as intensity. But, you know.
But it's being a good host. Right. And if had somebody over your house, you would want to make sure that they're, you know, entertained and all that. And if you treat life like you're the host all the time,
right on.
I believe you'll be given success.
Right on. I'm with you.
So I want to hear about your Naked Leadership podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. It's in the middle of transition as we speak. So we've been, at it for 4 years, and we interviewed some people, but we found out we really generated to serve our clients and to be something that's shareable from our clients to other people that might be on their teams or partners or, you know, potential friends or whatever. So it's Naked Leadership because we talk about the art of leadership, which is always, if done really well, will be very vulnerable. You know, you can go have the best idea out there and, you know, think really highly of yourself, which is fine and probably good and probably earned. But if you're going to lead extremely well, you're going to be willing to look like a fool. If anybody wants to listen to it, we really engage. We bring all the content from it from our current people we're working with, teams we're working with, organizations we're working with. So if we notice a tension on it with one person or in a team, it's pretty universal. Humans are pretty, we're pattern machines, right? So somebody that one team's struggling with is probably some principles here that probably other people are. So we'll really, we're not advice givers. We have plenty of advice to give, but whatever, YouTube that, there's a million books. We really get to the thinking behind the beliefs and the thinking behind the actions, because you could put a great plan in the hand of irresponsible people and the plan will become irresponsible, right? It won't work and you'll blame it on the plan. So we're very intention focused versus mechanism focused. Mechanisms are important. They're just what happens when your intention gets locked in. So anyway, the Naked Leadership Podcast has been a lot of that, like some background thinking. And it's me and my business partner, Dan Tacchini, who's 30 years my senior. He's the best in the world at training teams. And then Chad Brown hosts it, who's on our team as well and is a master coach. And my right hand, I coached him 15 years ago, and he's on the team now and runs all of our marketing and media. So it's great. We're actually shifting now and realizing feedback from our clients are what happens on the fly in the room with other people is really the magic. So we're experimenting. Even just today, I've got another, we're starting to coach people live, record the call, and then post that online. Because there's plenty of universal that everybody can listen to. And it's fascinating to watch people as they strive and squirm and hide and all the things people do. Everybody does. So we're going to start coaching people live and posting that.
That's
so
cool.
That'll be fun.
I love it. I love the concept.
Yeah. When most people think about coaching, it seems so weird. It seems so bullshitty. You know, it seems so like fluff and like pat on the backy and whatever, which is all boring to me. Yeah. I like a nice scrap, man. Ours is hand-to-hand combat for their sake, right? We call our work, fierce advocacy. So I'm in it for them. I don't know what they're up to. We're going to get their vision really clear. And then that's usually easy. Then the harder part is to get them sober about current reality. And that takes a lot more vulnerability and a lot more honesty to get sober about current reality than to get, but maybe not surprisingly, even very successful people sometimes aren't clear at all about where they're headed. And they're just coasting on last year, last quarter's momentum. And they've not yet even claimed what's so, let alone raise the bar for themselves and with their team for lots of reasons, but they don't do that. So we get clear and then we get really sober.
Yeah. And you do that by stripping them down and getting them naked, basically.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Oh yeah. We don't fuck around.
So if they want to follow your podcast, our listeners, or if they want to hear what else you got going on, how do they find you?
Yeah. They can find me on Instagram, like everybody else, adrian.k. On any like Apple or Spotify or wherever else it is, Naked Leadership Podcast. If you're into this kind of work, you know, reach out and we can have a conversation just to explore it. We work almost always with people inside their company. So I'll work with somebody around their company and with their team and that kind of work. If you haven't invested in yourself at all and want to at least do something that might not be in specifically in the context of work. We do 3-4 times a year. We do this 4-day personal leadership accelerant called the Revenant Process. It's 4 days. It's long days. It's not for the faint of heart. It's really for people like yourself, like myself, that are really always eager for what's next. It's amazing. The next one's going to be 4 days in Hawaii. Wow. On Oahu. Late October, and that's wearerevenant.com. We are Revenant, R-E-V-E-N-A-N-T.com. Or if you just message me, I'll send you the link for it. It's great. It's when we've recently surveyed 2,000 graduates, and 97% of them said it was in the top 3 experiences of their life.
That's incredible.
So there it is.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Adrian. And thank you to all of our guests for listening today. We'll see you all next time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. And thanks for listening, everybody.